This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50, plus 2 years of Charisma, which cost around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now, let me repeat. You get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of Charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with Charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report, and here's my episode.
Welcome to The Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
If you know me, you know I'm very interested in history. I read books on history. I visit historical places. I visit museums. I like to consider myself an amateur historian in many ways. And so when I had the opportunity recently to interview David Barton, we talked about the historical aspects of the founding of America. And I think you'll find this interesting. It's a little bit different perspective. You know, history is not taught in schools like it once was. And when it is taught, you know, it gets a very secular spin. But David Barton talks about how our country was founded on biblical principles. And he also talks about the differences between the four European groups that were colonists at different times in North America. And they, of course, are the Spanish, which founded St. Augustine, where I'm blessed to have a little vacation home. And so I have really gotten to know about St. Augustine, which is one of the reasons I brought it up to him. And then, of course, the British and the 13 original colonies, but also the Dutch, who colonized in, you know, New York originally. Of course, they sold it fairly quickly to the British, and also the French who originally settled here in Florida, were wiped out by the Spanish. They moved up to Quebec and later to Louisiana, but they each had a very different view of how their Christianity, since they were all from basically Christian countries, affected them and how they looked at slavery differently as well. So I hope that you enjoyed this podcast with historian David Barton. I've lived in Florida most of my life. I just learned recently it went from the Spanish to the British, and it was literally a British colony during the Revolution that did not join the Revolution, and that had escaped my notice. A part of it was because it had only been a British colony a very, very short time, and the population was extremely small down here. One of the things I've thought about is that in St. Augustine, of course, they harken back to their Catholic background, and there still seems like there's a Catholic church on every street corner in St. Augustine, whereas in the rest of the South, it's a Baptist church or a Methodist church. But nobody there really harkens back to their founding fathers. Now, of course, the founding with the Spanish and everything else was not really for godly reasons. It was for conquest reasons. By the way, do you even know that before St. Augustine, the French Huguenots landed in what's now Jacksonville? And the Spanish wiped them out in a massacre, so much so that the river, the intercoastal is called a river down here in Florida, is called Matanzas, which means massacre in Spanish, because that's where it happened.
Yeah, interesting. Didn't realize the river's named that.
Well, they killed them on the beach at an inlet, and they called it the Matanzas Inlet. And then the inlet, you know, is the mouth of the Matanzas River. And now, not very many Floridians know, I guess all the Spanish speakers would know, that it means massacre. And, you know, of course, the French gave up on Florida and went first to Quebec and then later Louisiana. Help me understand, just as an amateur historian who enjoys going around to museums, and my wife gave me 7 books on St. Augustine as gifts, and I've read all of them, and I just find it very interesting. But how is it different with the people who came to Jamestown and Plymouth Rock and those kinds of things than what I was describing with the Spanish? You know, even though in Florida, of course, is now part of the United States, that's one reason why most people, if you ask them what is the first failed colony in America, they would say Jamestown. And, you know, that was like 45 years after the French failed in Jacksonville and after St. Augustine was established where it is today.
There is such a I think, a lack of perspective on several things when you look at the American founding and North American colonies from the European side. You know, certainly there was a lot of trafficking within the colonies themselves of Native American tribes. Just moving this past weekend, I was up in Washington State, and there were seashells in Washington State that ended up with Indians in Florida because of the trade that occurred all the way across from one side to the other. And this was hundreds of years before any Europeans showed up. But even with Europeans, you've got the French, you have the Dutch, you have the Spanish, and you have the British, and they all four had different philosophical approaches, including the faith. You will find that the Spanish will be the most brutal of all the groups. They're very coercive in their faith. I mean, they're the ones who had the Spanish Inquisition. If you don't believe what we believe, we will kill you for that. So they were very aggressive in that.
And that was only a few years before St. Augustine was founded, like maybe 50 years.
You know, that period of time, they were very pro-slavery. Their faith didn't have problems with slavery. When you get a DeSoto and Coronado coming up through Mexico and into the Texas area over the Palo Duro Canyon, the way they treated Indians, they're looking for gold. Slavery is not a problem. Even the way that the Catholic priests and missionaries treated Indians, very, very different from any other. Then you take the French, and the French are better, but they're still somewhat coercive. They have the monarchical kind of system where that if you don't agree with them, they can be pretty brutal, but they're not nearly as coercive as the Spanish. And then you look at the Dutch, and the Dutch were kind of hands-off, I mean, kind of leave you alone, but they didn't mind transporting slaves. They were great slave traders, take the Muslim captured slaves and transport them. So their theology was pretty good. Their practices weren't always, but probably the British are the best of all of the Europeans at colonizing, because the British are divided into two camps. One of those camps was a state-established church, and that's going to be Jamestown Colony, where you have really more of an Anglican colony. They're not really Bible-believing. They're Bible-professing. They're Christian-professing. The way that the Jamestown colonists treated the Native Americans was pretty poor. But then you get to the Reformation Christians, the back-to-the-Bible Christians, and the Puritans and the Pilgrims and the Huguenots and others. And you find that that Plymouth plantation colony is completely different. They would not take a foot of ground if they didn't have title deed to it from the Indians. And if they found, as they did, that they found corn buried in the winter that helped them survive the first winter, they said, well, you know, that's not our corn. Somebody had it. We've got to find out who it was and pay them for it. And so the respect for biblical rights of property, of life, of freedom, etc., you know, whereas Jamestown tolerated slavery, we point to Jamestown 1619 as being the start of slavery in America. The second load of slaves went up to Massachusetts, and the Christians up there freed all the slaves and imprisoned all the slave owners. They said, this is a bad deal. So when you look at the colonization of America, you can't say, well, European colonization is good, bad, or whatever, because you've really got four nations, and you've got two different strains, even within the British. Whether you have the state-established church strain, which was the southern colonies, and that's where you'll find slavery was tolerated, and then you'll find the northern, more evangelical application, where they take the Bible and say, you know, because of the Bible, we need education, and because of the Bible, we need to make treaties with our Native American brothers, and we won't buy any land that we didn't get with the title deed. And you look at so much that they did civil government. They're the first ones to separate church from state. They elected their church leaders different than state leaders, which was not the case in Jamestown and elsewhere. So that Bible-believing, Reformation-minded group, and by the way, when you're in U.S. Capitol, you see the embarkation of the Pilgrims. They're all gathered around a Bible. And that was the reason that the Geneva Bible drove their life. And they spent hours a day literally studying that Bible. So there is a lot of diversity in the American colonization period, but the Spanish probably represented the most brutal and hard-fisted side. And the Pilgrims and the Separatists and the Reformation people represented the most benevolent and most Christ-like side. And there's a real difference.
Well, I find this very interesting, and there's actually a couple of rabbit trails I want to take, but I'm going to discipline myself and wait until toward the end of our conversation. Help me get a handle on this about God raising up America to be a light to the world. Now, people have different paradigms, and our culture has a paradigm that this doesn't really matter. I mean, now in school, don't they say that Thanksgiving was to thank the Indians for being nice to them or something? You know, and even a lot of Christians are very, very, I'm going to say, nonchalant about understanding this. Yet I've heard other people who say there's two nations in the world that God raised up. One was Israel, of course. you know, that's what the Bible's all about. And the other was America, because it was, you know, founded on Christian principles. And there were documents in which, you know, they pledged their future to God and all that kind of stuff. You'd know that a lot better than me. But how would I deal with this in a book? I guess that's, I'm trying to get my head around it, and I'm hoping you will give me stuff that I can quote.
When you look at the founding of America, on the side that was the really biblical side, they were very covenantal as a people, and they believed in covenants. And so whether it's what was done by John Winthrop on the Annabelle coming over on the ship in 1630, where that he talked about the covenant they had with God, or where it's the pilgrims, they saw that, and as John Winthrop said, if we deal treacherously with our God in this endeavor, you know, he'll bring judgment on us. And they had a very covenantal view, and they viewed it as covenants. And they viewed the contracts as covenants. As a matter of fact, that's why the longest-lasting treaty in American history was between the Pilgrims and the Wampanoags, and it was not the Pilgrims that broke the treaty, it was the Wampanoags who broke it. So in those early years, particularly in the Christian areas, they were covenantally oriented. They didn't just have agreements, they had covenants, and you didn't back off from that covenant. And that's more like Israel. You know, Israel had a covenant with God. It was a perpetual covenant. Abraham, they you know, killed the animals, split the animals in half. It was a blood covenant kind of a thing. And that's the way the early colonists, literally the Christian colonists, particularly the biblical colonists, viewed things. And so whereas we say, well, God chose Israel, we say America chose God. I mean, those are the two unique nations. And it's interesting to me that from the very beginning, we recognize there was no Israel, but we still recognize the significance of Jews and the significance of having Israel. As a matter of fact, when you look at Presidents John Adams and John Quincy Adams, they called for the reestablishment of Israel as a Jewish nation back in their day. In the 17, 1800s, there were a lot of Zionists among the founding fathers, and that's because they read the Bible and studied it. And there was even an attempt to create a new Israel in the New York area, Christians helping Jews to create a new promised land. So it's a very biblical approach that they had. And again, that's not the Southern approach, where it's the more state-established, the Anglican approach, which is a lot less Bible-oriented and a lot more religion-oriented, but in that biblical area. And so that's really what makes America kind of different in its founding, is covenants. And as we started moving west and get more secular people, we're willing to break treaties with Native Americans, etc. You find that in the 1600s and 1700s, nearly every treaty was broken by Native Americans. In the 1800s, nearly every treaty was broken by Anglos. But it was not that way at the beginning. So as we lost that covenantal viewpoint of relationship with God, land being land for persecuted people of God, wherever they were, whether you had those that came out of Austria in 1731 or the 400,000 that came out of France, persecutions in 1681, 82, whatever it is, we saw this as a covenantal kind of a land. And that's the way we performed for a long while. But again, as we got more secular in the late 1800s, last half of the 1800s and 1900s, that concept is gone, and we're no longer the same kind of nation we had been for the first 250 years.
And now, in terms of what's happening in our country now, where things are just so polarized, and it feels like things are getting worse and worse. And, you know, as a student of history, you know, of course, that there's never been a perfect time. Mankind has always been evil, going all the way back to Sodom and Gomorrah and before that. But it almost seems like it's happening at warp speed now. Maybe it's more because of communication. Is there anything with what I'm grappling with, the election in 2020 and what's happening, even assuming Trump gets in, he'll be in until 2024, but what is happening and where are Christians involved with this? And maybe my question should be, where is God in all this? Because God obviously established covenants, as you were just talking about. God has raised up leaders. I believe that he raised up this, you know, rough developer from Queens to do what none of these other 17 candidates, many of them strong evangelicals, could have done.
Yeah. Now, when you look at where we are now, my question is not where is God, but it's where are his people? And I say that for several different reasons. I work very, very closely with George Barna. We just put three massive polls out in the field on Christian values, beliefs, etc. Among things that we know is that with 384,000 churches and senior pastors in America calling 500 to 600 a day, we know that 72% of churches and senior pastors say they do not agree with the Bible, do not agree with his teachings, etc. So you're talking 72% of 384,000 immediately say, we don't like the Bible, we don't agree with it. Well, It's hard to have a covenant when you won't even recognize the basis of it. But that does leave us 28% that do. So focusing on that 28%, and we call them theologically conservative churches, in polling 500 to 600 a day, we ask them, do you think the Bible applies to all issues of life? And gave 14 examples. Does it apply to immigration? Does it apply to education and life and marriage and economics, etc.? And of that 100,000 pastors, between 91 and 97% said, absolutely, yes, the Bible addresses those issues. And we're going, all right. And then we ask the question, have you addressed any of those issues from the pulpit, or will you address those issues to the congregation? They said, absolutely not. Those are political issues. I'm going, wait a minute. You just said the Bible teaches those issues. And they said, no, if it's in the news, that makes it political, and we won't talk about it. That puts us at 2.8% of pastors addressing what the Bible addresses if it's also in the news. Now, that's a problem. We also have a problem. Only 14% of Christians read the Bible on a daily basis. That's not God's problem. That's our problem. We know that on biblical worldview, only 9% of Christians have a biblical worldview. Only 19% of born-again Christians have a biblical worldview. And only 4% of millennials have a biblical worldview. So we're looking at a nation that doesn't think biblically, doesn't even know what the Bible is. I talk to university presidents all the time, 190-some-odd Christian colleges and universities, and they say that the kids coming out of youth group to their schools now, Christian schools, they don't know the difference between Jonah and Moses. They don't even know the basic Bible stories. I was talking to a good friend of mine who runs a massive business, and he was talking to a guy about Adam and Eve, and he's a church-going kid. He said, who? Adam and Eve. Who in the world are they? He didn't even know who Adam and Eve were, and he'd been in church his whole life. So we're at a point now where it's not where's God, it's where's God's people. You know, where's God's word? I mean, he's given us every opportunity. Going back to Barna again, and he and I actually did a book together that was published through Charisma called U-Turn. And in looking at the stats, can document that in polling on behavioral and belief issues, that in more than 100 different moral categories, we cannot find any statistical difference between Christians and non-Christians and their behavior. Christians actually have a higher divorce rate than non-Christians. 80% of Christians got divorced after they became born again. Well, Malachi, God says, I hate divorce. Jesus told Peter in Matthew 19, hey, God doesn't allow no-fault divorces. And yet, you know, we're looking at what's happening among God's people. So biblical literacy is the biggest problem America faces right now. And a lot of that goes to education. We have given our kids over to the Babylonians and the Egyptians to educate. With me being interested in history, I will tell you that right now, across America, university-wise, for every one Republican history professor, there are 33 Democrat history professors. And there is a huge difference between the way the two parties view America and view our history. If you doubt that, read the platforms of both parties. It comes out very clear in those platforms. And so we put our kids in a system that is 33 to 1 skewed in a very anti-America, I don't like America. America needs a fundamental change. We need a new economic system, a new political system. We need to get rid of the Electoral College, all these things that made us great. We got to get rid of that. That's where we put our kids. And so what we know right now is 2 out of 3 Christians believe that there is no absolute moral truth, and 4 out of 5 millennials believe there's no absolute moral truth. Now, if you can't agree that certain things are morally wrong, period, man, you can't get a nation moving in the right direction. And that's where polarization comes from. We're now in a place described 3 times in the Bible that everyone did that which is right in their own eyes. I can choose my identity if I want. I don't care what's between my legs, male or female. My identity is between my ears, not between my legs. So we now have 92 legally recognized identities in America. Facebook, I think, allows you 74 choices on what your profile for your gender is. You know, you choose your gender. We're at a point in time, it's no surprise we're polarized. We can't even agree that there's 2 genders. The rest of nature agrees there's 2 genders. Try to find transgender, you know, in any mammal species in the world. It's not there except in our brains. So I would say that it's not where God is, it's where is God's people, and why have they stopped studying his word, and why do they no longer believe what he said? And that's where America is right now. That's where the crossroads is.
We could have talked a long time about history. He has such a wealth of information, which you can find from his website called wallbuilders.com. He is also on television, along with his son. There's something called the American Heritage Series, and also Foundations of Freedom. You can find out more about it. Plus, he's written many books, including one with George Barna that I had the privilege of publishing called U-Turn, talking about how America needs to make a U-turn back to God. So I appreciate him being with me. I'm going to use some of the material that you heard today in my new book that I'll be talking about later. But I just hope that you enjoyed this interview. I hope you learned something, and I hope it piques your interest to be more interested in history, especially the history of the founding of our country on biblical principles. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joy Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.